Welcome back to another episode of Community Guidelines. I'm Dr. Bradford. Dr. Dan, how you doing, man?
A little parched, taking a little bit of water, you know, get that little water in you.
It's good to do in the desert here.
Yeah, I hear it's good for health, you know. Figure I'd take that. You know, you got to watch that stuff, though, because it rusts pipes. Yeah. Had a patient say, I don't drink water. That shit rusts pipes. I drink alcohol. That stuff purifies the blood. I don't know if that's true or not. So what's on the docket for today, Doc?
Speaking of pipes, I just reinstalled a new sink in my kitchen.
Yourself?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It was all right.
Yeah, congratulations.
I'm not a plumber.
No? Makes you feel good when you do something like that.
It does. It's super frustrating, though, because I don't know what the heck I'm doing.
Yeah.
But no leaks, dishwasher runs.
That's all that matters.
Got a brand new kitchen going, so.
Nice.
So today I want to talk about
clogged pipes.
Speaking of clogged pipes. I want to talk about the title for today's show is Things That I'm Not Worried About.
Okay. So what aren't you worried about?
Well, so before we get into it, let me ask you this. So if I came to you as a doctor and wanted to offer you something that had the following characteristics.
Okay.
You tell me.
I'm the patient, not doctor to doctor, but I'm the patient.
You're the patient. Okay. We just got your labs back, and there's several things here that have been marked high and out of range. And, and so I want to propose to you a product that is going to do the following.
Okay.
It's going to lower your body's ability to produce energy in the cells.
Okay.
It's going to decrease your production of sex hormones.
Okay. So those are not benefits so far.
Testosterone, progesterone, estrogen.
Okay.
It's also going to lower your ability to make vitamin D.
Yeah, that's no good.
We've talked about vitamin D on here several times.
Yeah.
And it's going to pose a 48 to 71% increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's going to, just to top it all off, a little cherry on top, it's going to potentially increase your risk of developing cancer.
Wonderful. Well, so
should I get you,
so in other words, you're trying to kill me.
Should I get you a 30-day supply, or do you want to just jump in for a 90-day supply with?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on how long you would suggest. You know, I would it would take for me to assume room temperature.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to be on these for life, however much longer your life is.
Mm-hmm.
But your labs are out of range, and so we really need to get a hold of this. And if I give you this medicine, it's going to bring those levels back into range.
So I would ask,
maybe,
what are my ranges? What are we talking about? And then you've named off some fascinating effects of a medication.
Yeah.
And I take it that this is not—it's not given it. You're not giving this to patients to kill them, but there has to be some sort of perceived, promised benefit that the drug companies that we also trust these days are offering. So
this is for your health.
Yeah.
And this is critical, and we need to do this.
It doesn't sound like I'm getting any benefits of health, though.
Well, Dr. Dan, your cholesterol is high.
Oh, my cholesterol is high.
And that's increasing your risk for a heart attack.
Is that what it does?
I have this prescription ready to go.
Yeah.
Just tell me what pharmacy to send it to.
Interesting.
And we're going to get you on a statin.
A statin?
Right away.
Fascinating. Hey, you know, well, hell, you know. I would probably decline.
Yeah?
I would probably decline, yeah. And I guess, you know, coming from a doctor's standpoint, but if you know, if you're a, you know, $10 an hour ham and egger that, you know, is just showing up for life and, you know, you don't have a whole, you know, a background of health sciences or doctoring or that sort of thing, then, you know, unfortunately we trust the doctors that are saying, hey, your cholesterol's high, you need statin.
Yeah. Cholesterol's high. LDL's high. That's the, quote, bad cholesterol.
Yeah, yeah.
For you, that's through the roof right now. We need to get that down, and a statin is going to lower your LDL cholesterol.
Well, you know, this is fascinating that we are talking about this, because my LDL and my HDL were, you know, my good cholesterol was low and my bad cholesterol was high ever since you know, I got into a high stressed position with an office, and you never offered me a statin.
No.
Yeah. But what you did offer me, we got my cholesterol, you know, down. The good cholesterol is higher than it has been in 12 years.
Yeah.
And my bad cholesterol is lower than it has been in 12 years. So obviously there's a catch to this. Where are we going with this, Doc?
Well, I just, obviously I'm joking, right? But statins, they are the number one prescribed medications in the United States. Mm-hmm. In a top 20 list of scripts written in the United States, a statin medicine is at number one and also at number 18, two different forms of statin medications.
Wow. Psychotropic medication got to be two, I would imagine, or antibiotics, one of the two.
Yeah, I was just scanning the list for statins, so I didn't see. But according to, so I'm going to mention a couple of articles today that I was digging into these last couple of weeks. One is written by Dr. Colleen Huber. I actually work with her at another office, naturopathic physician, and she just wrote an amazing article on her Substack talking about how widespread chronic statin use set us up in the United States for a really crappy experience with COVID, mostly because of that interference between cholesterol being able to help you make and being critical to make vitamin D, activate vitamin D.
Interesting.
So, and she quotes, she's got like almost 100 different citations in the article, but one of the things she says, it's a $10 billion industry.
Wow.
As of 2019.
That's unbelievable.
With 35% of the United States on a statin.
Big business.
Yeah. You're sitting at a game, you know, the guy next to you, the guy on the other side, if you're not taking a statin, they probably are.
Yeah. America's going in, you know, we're going in so many wrong directions, you know, and that, I mean, that's another one of them. I mean, you're talking about a $10 billion industry. How about lending $5 billion into, you know, an industry that educates American people about how to avoid all of this stuff?
Sure.
You know, because, I mean, so we're on statins, but everyone is getting huger. Mm-hmm. Everyone is getting bigger.
And not in a good way.
Yeah. You know, heart disease through the roof, diabetes through the roof. I had a patient that had his foot cut off recently who was diabetic, you know, and it's just, it's things that can be prevented. But unfortunately, we have doctors that are nothing, they're acting like they're nothing more than just drug reps for these pharmaceutical companies that, sure. Oh, if you know, we saw it with COVID, they couldn't talk about health. They had to talk about, you know, what drugs are going to save them.
No, we, several shows back, we brought up, there was a chiropractor, I can't remember where he's at, but he was recommending vitamin C infusions and vitamin D for COVID, and the government is suing him for billions of dollars.
Unbelievable.
Our United States government.
Yeah, they'll ruin him. Never see him.
But you're right. Yeah, we don't talk about the things that actually matter. So, so that article, that one from Colleen Huber, that's a must read. Well, I'll put the link of it in the.
So that kind of links back to like when we see the NIH published research that when you have a Pfizer vaccine and a low vitamin D rate in your body, then it raises your risk for multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So that's one article that I'm pulling some information from. And then there's another doctor out there, Peter Attia.
Oh, yeah.
You might have heard of him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Peter Attia is a stud.
He's an MD. He's written several books. His most recent book is about, like, not aging. Mm-hmm. You know, how to,
yeah, he's the bald. He looks kind of like a Middle Easterner or darker fella, bald guy, usually wears a cap. But I've seen him on Rogan a number of times. He's a stud.
Yeah. Brilliant guy, and he has a 9-part series on his website about cholesterol.
Interesting.
And debunking all these myths. So something that you said just a few seconds ago, bad cholesterol, good cholesterol. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that started or where that nomenclature came about, but it's everybody's heard it and everybody knows it. And, you know, Peter Attia talks about it. I've heard other doctors talk about it. I hate that phrasing. Mm-hmm.
Tell me why.
Well, because cholesterol is required for life.
Okay.
You need cholesterol to be able to build a cell membrane. Mm-hmm. So your cell, you've got all these little they're called organelles. They sit inside the cell and they do all their individual jobs. Mm-hmm. And then around that cell, you have the cell membrane.
Yeah.
Cholesterol is required to be able to build that cell membrane.
Sure. All the phospholipids.
And to be able to signal and transport nutrients, chemical signals, electrical signals in and out of your cell.
Yeah.
So if you don't have cholesterol, you can't live. Mm-hmm. It's required for life. One of the reasons I think and things that I've read, so LDL and HDL, these serve two different purposes. Mm-hmm. LDL, low density lipoprotein, one of its major jobs is to leave the liver and then go out and circulate in the body and get deposited in these cell membranes and get deposited in the body. HDL does the opposite, you know, to kind of dumb it down. HDL scours the body for cholesterol, brings it back to the liver where it can be processed. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, in a nutshell, kind of the reason why it's called good cholesterol, bad cholesterol. Mm-hmm. But it's not inherently good. It's not inherently bad.
It's part of the process.
It just does different things.
Right.
And you need it.
Right.
So to have this kind of medical approach of just throwing an atom bomb in your body and shutting off that production of LDL cholesterol, shutting off the production of cholesterol, it's garbage.
Well, it's, you know, we trust the government in order to take care of us. And what are they doing? I mean, they're causing things to not show up for work, just like we do in society. They're trying to put our cholesterol on welfare so it just sits around and doesn't do much. You know what I'm saying? Well, you know, back in the day, I remember when it was one of the research articles was discovered that when they discovered that high-dose statins would cause a decrease of plaquing in the arteries.
Okay.
Okay. And I want you to discuss, you know, what sets up the plaque, because so often we're sold high cholesterol, high bad cholesterol, that's where plaque comes from, and that's what clogs the arteries and that sort of thing. One of the issues that we saw was that if you look at the results of it, it was, you had to be, I mean, we started seeing people come into our office where their total cholesterol was below 100. Mm. Okay. And then when I was following it is that you saw the, and that was the American Heart Association that was kind of getting behind this. And they were also consequently also about the same time, they had come out with any time when you're at 120 over 80, then you were on a diuretic, beta blocker and something else. And I remember talking to cardiologists. I'm like, how the hell, I mean, you aren't taking into account someone cut you off, you had a bad day, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Right.
And the cardiologist, he said, he put it eloquently like this. He goes, so many of these associations, like American Heart Association, they're sold to the public like they are the monopoly on cardiac care.
Right.
He says 30% of cardiologists belong to the American Heart Association, 70% don't, and there's a reason for that. And he says, we look at, you know, all of the different issues that, you know, to make decisions, not based off of your 121 over 81, now we're just going to push a bunch of drugs. And then, you know, in an intelligent mind, you're going to look at that and you're like, well, who's profiting from this?
Right.
So the problem that we also saw with cholesterol was that the American Psychiatric Association, they came out against using the statins in order to reverse plaque because of the cognition issues, the memory issues. They were almost creating like senile type patients because you weren't producing the hormones from the cholesterol, and you were having short circuiting because the neurons weren't having the insulation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Your nervous system relies heavily on cholesterol to be right. able to enhance and improve cell membrane. Again, back to the cell membranes, signaling, electrical mm-hmm. signaling. Mm-hmm. So talking about plaque buildup.
Yeah.
So yes, there is a potential risk for LDL to contribute to plaque buildup.
Contribute.
In your blood vessels. And that's really the only time that that is risky. Mm-hmm. So just knowing how much LDL cholesterol you have
sure.
is not super beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
I heard I heard a doctor talking about it one time, and he used a really great analogy. So you've got cholesterol particles, and you have cholesterol transport proteins. So that's the cholesterol particle is like the passenger in the car, and the transport protein is like the car. So, and he used this analogy of traffic on the freeway. Okay, so if you've got 100 passengers on the freeway, and each one of those passengers is in its own individual car, that's going to be a lot of traffic.
Sure.
If you've got 100 passengers on the freeway, but they're divided up into two stagecoach buses, the freeway is going to be empty. So measuring transport proteins, apolipoproteins, is a more beneficial way of assessing risk when it comes to cholesterol. And your typical doctor out there is not going to check that.
Right.
They're going to check total cholesterol, triglycerides, LDL, HDL, VLDL.
So you're, I mean, now we're talking, now we're finding minute things that will affect more of what the issue is.
Yeah.
But still, we also have to look at what causes that, that whole inflammatory reaction where we start seeing plaque deposit. I mean, that, that is the rising and, you know, the constant tension in the blood vessels from stress and tension. And
so here's another piece to it. Oxidized LDL. So oxidative damage. You know, to use an analogy in the real world, you know, you see like a rusty car, a rusty gate, that's oxidative damage. So this is a change in the normal function of that particle or that tissue. When LDL cholesterol becomes oxidized because of a diet and a lifestyle that's low in antioxidant nutrients, you know, things that you find in fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, LDL particles can potentially become oxidized. An oxidized LDL is volatile. It's risky. It's more energetically active, I guess you could say. It's like this little tiny golf ball bouncing around in your blood vessels. Oxidized LDL particles can, when they hit against blood vessels, they can cause damage. They can cause little micro tears in the blood vessels. They can start to get embedded in the blood vessels.
That whole inflammatory reaction.
And that's what kicks off that whole inflammatory reaction, foam cell production, plaque buildup, and blockages. So just knowing how much LDL you have, and that's, it's a calculated value too. We don't really know absolutely for sure. It's a calculated best guess estimate on lab work.
Right.
Just knowing how much LDL you have is not really super helpful information. Knowing LDL oxidized and knowing particle size and knowing how many of these carrier proteins that you have going around, that's way more helpful information. And potentially can kind of calm the patient down, I guess, and let them know that that they're really not at the risk that the doctor might think that they are.
So say if you had, say if I came to you and you look at my cholesterol levels, you look at all of the different apolipoproteins out there.
Yeah.
And you're saying, hey, Dan, we got to do something here.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your, what is the pathway that you put people on?
It's a good question. So another thing I want to emphasize today is the role that food plays in cholesterol.
Okay.
And it's not as much as you would think.
Okay.
And also the foods that are attacked or targeted as like contributing to cholesterol are maybe not what you might think.
So percentage wise, I mean, give us an idea. So, you know, the ones that I think of eggs, they get bad rap.
All the time.
Beef.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the, even certain things like, there's questions about avocados. There's questions about coconut oil. Yeah, so
we hear,
you know, the saturated fats and whatnot. So, I mean, what's your take on all that?
We hear fat and we immediately think about cholesterol and, you know, because that brings into play, like how packages are labeled, you know, low cholesterol, no cholesterol. So the foods that, at least in my experience and from things that I've read and studied, the foods that will contribute the most to raising cholesterol, raising triglyceride levels, are actually refined carbohydrates.
Processed foods.
And processed foods and sugars. Mm-hmm. When your body reaches kind of its max of being able to handle or tolerate a level of sugar in the body, it's going to start converting that to triglyceride. Mm-hmm. So the eggs, the meat, the animal protein don't really contribute to your, to raising cholesterol levels. And just from the outset, only about 25% of cholesterol burden in the body is coming from food.
25%.
About 75 to 80% of the rest of your cholesterol, you're actually making it on your own.
Right.
In your body.
By the liver.
By the liver. And so to have this like full scale attack on something that is a natural process in the body, it makes no sense to me.
Well, I think, you know, so how I would look at that is like, say if we have our, you know, our good old American meal of a hamburger and fries, you know, and a milkshake or something like that. I mean, so depending on how the beef is processed, you know, whether it's organic, grass fed, you know, or it's full of shit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you're combining a processed bread product.
Sure.
With deep fried potatoes.
Yeah.
And dairy products. I mean, that, so now we see an insulin spike because of all of these processed sugars. And we tend to hold on to all of this, you know, type of bad food. But yeah. I think, you know, if you were to compartmentalize everything and start to, you know, reduce, like, okay, let me have the, like, what I'll do is, say, get a hamburger, no bun, no cheese, lettuce, tomato, sweet potato fries.
Yeah.
More of a complex carbohydrate where you don't have the, that reaction. I mean, little things like that can make quite a difference, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Conventionally raised beef can be pretty inflammatory. The balance between omega-3 fatty acids, which are anti-inflammatory, and omega-6 fatty acids, which are pro-inflammatory, it really gets flipped on its head when you're eating something that's been conventionally raised. They're going to, just the quality of the feed is crap. They load them up with a bunch of junk at the end of life so that they can fatten them up.
Sure.
And these, and so you have this imbalance of pro-inflammatory, anti-inflammatory fats.
Yeah.
So the beef itself is not an issue. It's how was it raised? How was it slaughtered? How was it, how was that animal grown,
processed
and raised? So yeah, the food wise, I tell patients to cut back on sugar, cut back on refined carbohydrates, cut back on processed foods and focus on a whole food diet. So,
which means clean proteins, vegetables,
absolutely,
complex carbohydrates, that sort of thing, that are less reactive. I mean, even eggs. You know, I mean, I think that when eggs get a bad rap, there was a, you know, there was a guy in New York who he ate. I think his whole diet was eggs. I get that. I'm going to get this wrong, so I won't go too far on it. But when they did a, when they did a, an examination of him, I mean, they found no plaquing in his arteries and whatnot. And so it kind of turned the narrative on its head a little bit. And I think that when you demonize one food, when you compartmentalize it and say, well, the egg is bad because of the cholesterol content of it, I mean, you're also negating the fact of the phosphatidylcholines and the serines that the brain utilizes out of the yolk in order to, you know, form, you know, healthy brain cells and whatnot.
Absolutely. Yeah, an egg is a complete protein. It's got the full complement of, like, all the amino acids that you need to be able to build normal, healthy tissue. Eggs are... they're on the top of my list.
How about, you know, what's your opinion on the effect of exercise on specifically, not necessarily, I'll have you bring it into like cardiovascular type, but what is the effect of exercise on cholesterol levels if diet lends about 25% into the total cholesterol count? How would you say exercise plays into it?
I mean, I think there's no replacement for it. You know, for one, you're going to, you're going to improve heart health with exercise.
Okay.
You're going to improve cardiovascular tone. You're going to improve how your body circulates and pushes oxygen through the body.
Okay.
Which is anti-inflammatory, antioxidant. Uh-huh. There's no replacement for it. It's critical.
I think that, you know, when we look at cholesterol, because I have noticed that was an integral part of my journey of lowering my cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
Adding in more cardio, mm-hmm. Changing my diet, you know, that sort of thing. My stress is pretty low, you know, but I think the factor that no one reports on is that when you exercise, you are causing an expansion contraction of the blood vessels, which are a certain type of muscle. And so they maintain this flexibility that we tend to lose as we get older. So there is something called atherosclerosis, which is the plaque buildup of the arteries. But there's also something called arteriosclerosis, which is the hardening of the arteries. And that's due to lack of exercise,
mm-hmm.
a pro-inflammatory condition in the body that is inflaming these things. And so you start to get this fibrotic type of tissue that starts to replace the flexible muscle tissue, the smooth muscle. And with the arteriosclerosis, when you have, you know, stressful moments, you want to have the body be able to adapt, as opposed to having this hardness where now all of a sudden it is just not reactive, and so it does not operate as such.
Yeah, and that makes me wonder and want to go down the rabbit hole about mitochondrial function,
mm-hmm.
and arteriosclerosis, and and hardening of the muscles and inflammation in the muscles, because you know, coming back to the very first thing I said, a statin medication will reduce production of cellular energy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways it does that is it's blocking the pathway of creating something called CoQ10.
Mm-hmm.
CoQ10 is a critical component, and this,
especially for heart health,
and this ties into mitochondrial health.
Yeah,
we know that lean muscle, is one of the highest kind of concentrated areas of mitochondria, mm-hmm. in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so by building muscle mass, by having better muscle health,
mm-hmm.
You're going to increase heart health. You're going to increase oxygenation of the body. You're going to increase cellular energy.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think, what we're getting at here, and what Americans have to realize, people in general have to realize, is that when a doctor tells you, okay, your cholesterol is high, so we're going to give you a statin because we don't want you to have a heart attack, okay?
Yeah.
And then what the second thing I'll hear is that, well, they have me taking CoQ10 because it reduces the CoQ10, which is a cofactor of blood flow and oxygenation of the heart tissue.
Yeah.
Okay? And I'm looking at him. I'm like, so did the cardiologist tell you about, you know, exercise? And how to exercise, and diet, and all of these different factors, stress, you know. But so often we just see this, well, take this drug.
Take this poison. We're going to poison you with this.
And we're going to check it.
But we're going to give you a little bit of an antidote here for one of the...
And they think they're doing something good for themselves. Because I think if you look at... now, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but... Isn't there, when we started seeing the statins roll out, and we started seeing all of these people coming around with lowered cholesterol levels,
mm-hmm.
there was no change in the mortality of heart attacks and strokes?
I believe you're correct. Yeah, and Dr. Huber in her article talks about that. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And so, you know, and here again, you're trusting the pharmaceutical companies, and the doctors will get a lot of their education by what the farm reps, you know, will tell them. But,
right.
you know, here is, again, the problem. You identify something that necessarily is not a problem.
Right.
So you attack that problem because now you want to sell a drug.
Right.
But the problem is sold that if you change this problem, if you lower this cholesterol problem, it's not, you're going to have less of a risk of a heart attack and stroke and that sort of thing. And that is not necessarily true.
No, it's not. And compounded on top of that, you've got your increased risk for diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So creating creating more of a customer there.
Yeah, less, I mean.
For the insulin and the metformin and the glipizide. And
less hormones, less vitamin D.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a listener listening in, you know, you're like, okay, I'm sold a bill of goods that is just not panning out like I thought it would.
Right.
What do I do?
Well.
So they come in.
Just listening to this, I mean, as we say at the end of every show, this is not medical advice. Talk to your own doctors. And if you don't like what your doctor's saying, then give us a call. But statin medicines, just to put that out there, it's not necessarily something that you have to wean off of. Mm-hmm. You can stop those cold turkey.
I mean, even that, you know, I had a heart surgeon that was on statins, and he started coming to me because he developed all these muscle issues.
That's
you know, these muscle aches and cramps and everything.
Rhabdomyolysis, yeah. Potentially irreversible muscle damage.
Yeah. And this is fascinating. He goes, we ended up recommending, I think it was high dose omega-3s and Google lipids and citrus bergamot.
Okay.
Recommended it was two or three of those, and it actually worked better than the statin. And plus, he didn't have to have all this, you know, this muscle fatigue and tension and achiness.
Nice. I would say for the regular listener out there, if you have been told in the past that you have high cholesterol, if you are on a statin medicine, if you've got a family history of heart disease,
diabetes,
stroke, if you've got a family history of diabetes, heart attacks, anything like that, you need to talk to a doctor who knows more than just a basic lipid panel.
Right.
And we'll dig a little bit deeper, look at some of these additional risk factors, the carrier proteins, the oxidation damage, other enzymes and things that can show up. And do more than just take it for face value and you know, talk to somebody who's going to look a little bit deeper.
What about, let me ask you this. I noticed that some of my patients that you will see, but they will take testosterone and they try and kind of like, you know, they get caught up in this total number.
Mm-hmm.
They got to be in the 1200 range. They got to be in the 2000 range, whatever it is. And they don't want to listen to that there's better ways in order to do it where you can use left. But I mean, isn't one of the side effects of taking too much testosterone exogenously, you know, a TRT, can't you run the risk of starting to raise up the inflammatory reaction and change the cholesterol count?
I can definitely see where there could be a connection there. Knowing that cholesterol is the starting point, that molecule that's used and broken down and converted and changed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you pull up on Google image search, cholesterol versus testosterone molecule, they look very similar. Mm-hmm. And that's because
one's
it's coming from
other,
cholesterol. So we know with hormones that anytime you add more of the end product, you've got the potential for what we call negative feedback back to earlier up the chain to either tell your body to produce more of or less of whatever that starting point was. We see that with like fertility risk, potentially with testosterone replacement. It's going to send a signal up to the brain and reduce production of something called LH and FSH.
Mm-hmm.
So these are two hormones, signaling hormones from the pituitary to the testes or the adrenal glands or telling your body to make sperm to make testosterone.
So I can
see where that could potentially be connected. I don't know exactly. I haven't read anything about it, but
I'm just kind of going off of memory when I used to do, you know, a lot of blood work for patients, and I don't anymore, but it seems like there was something about, you know, where I would read that. But, you know, so often when we see these, you know, I like to look at, you know, when someone's testosterone is too high, you just recognize it. It's like they start to get this kind of bulged eye, redness, full face look, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the other issues is that sometimes, you know, the blood pressure can go high, which mm-hmm. can put stress on the arteries. Yeah. And that's where you start to get that whole inflammatory reaction of the plaquing, you yeah. know, and they don't realize it because they think, well, I just need to be strong.
Right.
You know, I need my TRT in order to be good in the bedroom and, you know, have a little bit more muscle mass and a little bit less belly fat. But, you can't ever look at there's one thing that you can take and there's only one effect that you can get from it because it might have multiple good effects. It might have good and bad effects.
Bingo. I worked with another doctor, Dr. Turner in Phoenix, Lila Turner, and she always described hormones as a spider web. The web of hormones and just use that analogy of like you affect, oh, I hit my microphone. Uh-huh. That was that web sound effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you affect one thing, it's going to have that ripple effect everywhere else.
Right.
And nowhere is that more pronounced than when you start messing with hormones.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. I think that's pretty fascinating, Doc. So I would, you know, I trust you with my health and I think that you've done a great job. I mean, my cholesterol was, you know, it was not going in the right direction. And, you know, I used to have HDL in the 80s, you know, very, very high.
Yeah,
and,
that's great.
And I am on my way back to getting that again with no medication whatsoever.
Well, you know, if you change your mind, I've got the prescription pad right here. And we, like I said, we can either start with a 30-day supply or get you right into a 90-day supply.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. No, thanks. I'm going to stay healthy. I'm not buying into this pharmaceutical horse shit that we, you know, get stuffed down our throat. No, thanks.
Oh, man. All right. Well, good chat. So thanks for joining us on Community Guidelines. I'm Dr. Bradford. You can find us online at downtowngilberthealthcare.com. And you can find us on social media. Dr. Dan is on TikTok, Dr. Dan the Man. He's on Instagram. I'm on Gab. I'm on Instagram. Just search Dr. Bradford and you can find me. Yeah, till next time.
That's right.
Let's go eat a steak.
That's it.
See ya.